Yeah, because your experience when you were certainly very militant, if I could use that word, when you were at in the 1960s,
yes,
with the unions, your experience surely would have helped to communicate better with workers.
If God, if our Lord Himself had come down off the cross, He would not have made any progress with the particular state of mind we were dealing with. This, you know, there was a small group of intransigent shop stewards mainly, and they just weren't prepared to listen. As far as they were concerned, and this is what I believe destroyed any hope of reality entering the scene, was that they always believed from day one that the government would save the mill because it was the last remaining paper mill in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And the government did make a stupid mistake in pumping funds in for a restart. And I just repeat,
Yeah, okay.
It was the belief that the mills would never be allowed to close.
And so, can you remember, because I know it's a long time ago now, but can you remember those days? What kind of proposals were you putting to the workforce?
We had a pro forma, rationalisation programme, which set out every single department before and after, with a reduction in personnel and reorganisation of duties and so on.
Would it have worked in hindsight?
Of course it would have worked. It worked in every other mill in the world. You know, Bill Scott had brought his expertise and experience into play and helped to draw up. I mean, I personally was able to contribute to the rationalisation programme because I was so familiar with the mill. The engineering department and the production side of it, you know, and we knew what would work and we knew what wouldn't. But when people, as I said, when people were so intransigent as to believe that it would never close, they could sit around all day and the mills.
Yeah.
And as you know, there was a hunger strike. They marched on Kildare Street, on government offices, all in the belief. And they were right to a point. Due to an extraordinarily lunatic decision, there was money pumped in, something like 7 million, to restart it. So restart with what? The three people that could have made it work were gone. Okay. Henry Lunn, Brian Mullally and Michael Honan.
And were your hearts in it? I mean, were you sincere in trying to keep it going?
Sincere is an understatement. I was all my life, the majority of my working life in the mill. All my friends were there. I was former secretary of the Sports and Social Club. I set up the Sports and Social Club.
That's right, yeah. And that was...
And who's to say my heart wasn't in it? It was far deeper in it than any of the...
But was Henry Lunn's heart in it?
He was, if the figures added up. His job, Morris, was to make a profit, a return for the shareholders.
Okay.
And he couldn't in the circumstances that he found when he took over.
So it was at that point then that he saw that there was no hope and he left you go. He said, you know, you go off now and you try and...
But it was in liquidation.
Yeah, at that stage.
The assets had been handed over to a liquidator. And he was trying to realise the assets.
There was
nothing left.
Yeah.
I was there. I was in over in India. I had my own office.
Yeah.
But these people had occupied the mill, remember?
Yeah.
They had occupied the mill.
But the social activities that you just touched on was very interesting too, because you instigated that at the time.
I set up the Sports and Social Club. I was involved in inter-firm soccer, an interdepartmental soccer.
Who did you set it up with?
Oh, Liam Stone would come to mind, Jerry Courtney, Agnes out of, you know. It escapes me, but I did most of it myself. That's why I can't remember who else did it. We had a deduction at source, and we built up funds.
What year did you start the club?
It would have been 75, the mid-70s.
Okay, and was it a success, do you think?
There was a clubhouse with a bar in it. It's still there. I think they're still in and out of it. The glue pot.
Yeah.
Was that
a good investment? Was that
it was wonderful. It was first class. We developed a soccer pitch up to Nanga Road, and we had our annual dinner dances in the Burlington. Oh, that was perhaps that was another sign or indication Bert Cusick got that I could get things done, because he was there at the opening day.
Yeah.
And it was a huge achievement, you know.
Was that one of your prouder moments?
I was very, very... The two moments that are most proud would be the opening of the Sports and Social Club. That would be one of them. And the other would be being appointed as a board member, a director. Because I remember when I started in the mills, in 24th of November 1967, 24th of November. I remember about a week later talking to Eddie Comiskey, who was the timekeeper, and watching the big cars pulling into the office yard. And I said, "What's going on over there?" He said, "There's a board meeting. And there were Bentleys and Daimlers and Rolls Royces." And I was a lowly paid engineer who said, "God, I wonder, would I be driving in like that?" I did, but I walked. That was the proudest moment, being the director.
Really?
Being the director, yeah. It just showed you, that, you know, that... And it was a sort of a double whammy. Bert Cusick had, I know, encouraged my promotion up to the point he left. But when Henry and Brian took over, they fired the personnel manager, who shall remain nameless, and a number of others were dispensed with. And the only promotion was me, with the new regime.
Yeah.
So I hope that said something.
And I suppose it's like a game. You pick the right team and you're successful. So do you think you were the right team? And going forward from that point,
it was the only team that could have ever saved it and kept it going. There was nobody else. It was the best team I've ever worked with. And once they were lost, we were lost. There was no hope.
Well, so we know that it all came to an end in 1982, and then it reopened for a couple of more years, and then it finally closed.
That's right. And after doing away with 7 million.
What do you know about the Canadians that came in for a short time?
Very little. I remember at that point I was in Killala, County Mayo. I was up to my tonsils in difficulty with unions up there and Japanese people who didn't want to stay and so on. So I was pretty busy. The only information I had would be when Brian Malloy might phone me and say, you know, that they're after doing a deal to buy pulp.
Yeah.
And the people that they were buying the pulp for did away with the money or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But John Kilduff was put in charge. He was the sales director. And he was put in as sort of general manager of the general... Yeah, managing director of the new mills.
Okay.
Now, John is a fabulous guy. He came up here and spent a weekend with me, by the way, to pick my brains when they did start up the new company. But they never had a prayer, never had a chance. It was a rip-off.
But can you comment on that? I mean, the Canadians, were they brought in to just close it down? That was suggested to me.
Well, I can't speak for Albert Reynolds and his fellow travellers in government.
Yeah.
But when they saw what they'd bitten off, I think they panicked. And it could have very well been that they brought the Canadians in to close it.